conversation occurred this last week between Pastor May and myself, and Pastor Dean kind of got into the mix about, we watched this great video last week by Reggie McNeil, hopefully challenged your socks off. And if you weren't here last week and didn't get to see that video, I'm sorry that you missed that. But we kind of had this other crazy idea. Again, we showed a video in church. That was crazy in itself. But we kind of had another crazy idea of, what if we talked about it? And I'll let you guys have an opportunity to share maybe how God spoke to you through that video, or hopefully through the sermons on a regular basis, but specifically on this video, challenging us to go out. And so what we did is, if you take out your green ink or your notes, you'll notice that we took some of the notes that we had taken down between Pastor Dean and I, since we kind of collaborated on this, and to try to refresh your memory on what was said during the video. Again, this is Reggie McNeil. He was one of the speakers, keynote speakers at the North American Baptist Conference that Pastor May and spouses and families went to this past summer. And so he challenged us in different ways. One of the things he kind of started with in the fact that, you know, people today essentially are done with church. Do you want to mute Kathy's mic before she embarrasses herself anymore? people are done with church. In fact, in the millennial age, 1 in 3 says no thank you to any kind of organized religion. He specifically said, not just Christianity, but religion in general. They're saying no. No thank you to even religion at all. And so he says that it's time to recalibrate the church to God's mission. And just in the fact that we need to be sent people. We are sent ones. We are sent to be a blessing to those around us. And so I love the story where he just says you wouldn't pay a missionary to go somewhere overseas or whatever and set up a sign that says if you want to find Jesus or see Jesus, you know, come here on Sundays between 11 and 12. I'd be happy to tell you about it. And yet that's kind of what we expect, in the sense that we have this building. We expect people just to, if they want to see who Jesus is, they just got to come here. And so we need to recalibrate ourselves, recalibrate our churches, and be sent ones. I mean, sent ones to be what? Or to be people of God, to be people of a blessing. And then also to do what? And that is to go and proclaim the kingdom, to be a kingdom, be kingdom focused. Because that's the destination. This building, this coming here is not the destination. The destination is the kingdom. And so with that, we'd love to hear your thoughts on that. What went through your minds when you were listening to Reggie speak? What spoke to you, I guess? Or what moved you? I'm going to move forward to some of the more part of the panel. So I brought Pastor Dean up here for support. that way, if you ask me a hard question, he can answer. We'd love to hear from you guys. Please speak loud. Don't be afraid. Otherwise, if you don't talk, you'll have to listen to me the rest of the day.
I thought about doing the roaming mic, you know, but somebody would have to be really wore out trying to run back and forth. So just speak loudly. Anyone have any thoughts? Like I say in class, not all at once. Just
you know me, I can talk. When I first came to Colfax, I wasn't sure which church I would go to because I had grown up in a Disciples Church, had gone to a Baptist church that was coordinated with the Disciples, had been in a Methodist community church, and had attended a Presbyterian church. So I'm looking at the list of these churches, and it was because somebody invited me here on top of the fact that there was parking here for me to attend. The difference in someone inviting me and coming here was the difference in where I ended up going to church. And you're stuck with me.
We're most happy to be stuck with you. Yes, Ariel.
Something that you said that really stuck out to me was, you don't go through the first person with the last person, helping that person with their walk with God. And it's not really up to you, like you said, growing up in his tribe, it didn't count unless you're not going ahead.
Right. He's saying you don't know which part, reiterating what Reggie said, you don't know which part in the trail you are. Number one, number seven, number eight, whatever, when you're faithful to proclaim Christ to that person that you run into in that community. So we're all part of the process, and that's encouraging to know that. Others. Where?
Back in about 1945, I believe it was, 46, we came down to Garfield. My dad said, let's go down here. They got a new man at the Baptist Church. And they had to run back to the town. So we did. We came down. And on the way home, my dad said to mother, he said, wife, he said, what'd you think about it? She said, would you come back? He said, I certainly would. Boys, what about you? Yeah, we'd come back again, you know. But he says, what impressed you? And we said, well, impressed in the music, the choir, and the word for the pulpit, and the fellowship of the people. And that means so much. But the fellowship of people, they greet you, and they make you feel welcome. You're not a stranger among everyone else. So fellowship, this here says fellowship, and I says, not only fellowship, but fellowship is very important. When the Word of God is preached from the pulpit, and the music, everything all goes together. But fellowship is very important. Thank you.
Interview was very challenging to get me to think about the fact that whether I'm on the fire district, or whether I'm a school teacher, or whatever my application is, whatever group of people I'm meeting with, but that is my opportunity to be the church in that situation. And I think you did a really good job on challenges. No matter where we're planted, we're with a group of people somewhere. With me, it might be the fertilizer man that's servicing my practice. So look at everything as an opportunity to be the church in the community. And when you look at a church down like this, a lot of things are happening.
So with that same thought, I really like this one little one-liner that said, we've got opportunity to show up and show up. So I'm not doing my part, and it's encouraging that. Not that that doesn't mean you have to have a job, but you have the challenges.
And how easy it really is to bless the people you are around, and I wonder why I don't do it more often, but it you know, that is not a huge step to be a blessing a lot of times to the people that you're around.
I know when he was talking about the restaurant, you know, dealing with the waitress. Mm-hmm. I'm married to a former waitress, and she, just to kind of illustrate and go a little further than what Reggie, kind of going the other way, Connie said that of all the days of the week when their various shifts would come up, her and her fellow waitresses and waiters, the day they hated to work the most was Sunday afternoon. People would come in looking like this, and she said they were the rudest. They were they tipped the least, and you know, we ought to be the ones that set the standard the other way, raise the bar, shouldn't we? It's almost like we go out into the culture sometimes, church folk. I mean, almost expecting special treatment. That's certainly the impression they had working at Denny's or whatever in Tri-Cities. And so it is very pervasive, very pervasive. We've talked to others since who have echoed that. And so I wonder how we are in those settings, in the restaurant setting, and how we're treating that person. Are we asking them, hey, how can I pray for you? You know, and not sure how far that would go if we had a $30 meal and we left a dollar, you know, or whatever. Those things all go together, you see. Anyway, just a thought. Anybody else?
Sometimes it's just taking time from your busy day. One of our loved ones was walking down the gravel road one day and not doing real well, and a semi truck driver stopped and gave him a ride and prayed with him and sent him on his way safely. And that's, you could have driven right by.
Yeah.
It was a total God-driven case.
I think it's seeing a need and acting on it. Because a lot of times, along with what Joe was saying, we're too wrapped in ourselves to see.
Yeah.
And then you can act on it. Because God could face those needs if your eyes are open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mentioned this before, but it's about paying attention. And I kind of, like, one of the avenues having to look at Christ is through Facebook. You know, kids, friends of friends, this one gal, she came back up here from Nevada about a year and a half ago, and I know that she'd come from down in Vegas and that lifestyle and was pregnant and came up here. And she wrote, she accepted my friendship because I knew her back when she was like 16 or 17, now she's about 27. And she wrote, "I can barely sleep at night. How do I get rid of the guilt?" Bingo! Messenger.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, Mercedes, I know exactly about the guilt. There's one way, and I'd like to talk to you about it when we get together. So then I grab my Gideon's New Testament and in front of me, meet up with her. And sometimes it's just like paying attention, even with people who are posting on Facebook. And if you can use it as opportunity. And, you know, I understand about guilt and shame, and there's one something I really want to talk to you about. And so I'm not saying, well, you have to look like me, act like me, come to my church. It's like, you know, I've been through there, through the shame and the guilt, and communicate to them that we have. So it's about relationship.
Good. Absolutely.
He said, there's two, I've put down a lot of quotes from him, but one of them he said is, he can't grow up with a church-centric narrative. So that was sort of encouraging to me in the sense that you don't have to be on, and I mean, you should always be inviting people to church and knocking at the door, but you can do that and show the Lord in the church and what it's all about purely through just simple conversations. So you don't have to say Jesus is anymore. Talk about the Lord just in the way that you're living. He said in there, even if Jesus doesn't come up in the conversation, he's in the conversation. He is easy to talk about. So that's, I don't know, sometimes I think that gets overwhelmed about, like, what's the perfect, like, church thing to say? Like, what verse can I apply to that? And that's great to do as well. But sometimes people just aren't even at that level. You just need to love on them. And just by saying simple words, but doing it the way Jesus lived, but not having to have all the proper, you know, things that you're saying according to, you know, textbook Christian.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You know, in the book of Esther, the name of God is not even mentioned. But he's all over. And that's what you're saying. In normal conversation, we should be permeating everything that we're about. And so even if the gospel isn't even brought out, it's just the way we listen, maybe the way we cry with them or hear them or whatever. It's so true. I'm glad you brought that out.
Well, we have to remember that we are the church. I mean, this building is just a building, but everybody in here is the church. And so, you know, it's not going out there and saying, "Hey, come to my church." No, you are the church. You know, you are the gospel. You are the message. And then, if you're kingdom focused, you're not thinking, "Oh, I got to get my church bigger. Got to get my church bigger."
Yeah.
It's, no, I want to go to the kingdom. Sorry, Mary Ann, I got you.
Who is it? Oh, Mary.
Well, I'm so thankful for the fellowship of this church. And I started out in 1941 when I was baptized at this church. And we grew up as teenagers, got married in this church. had friends, and so many, many friends that have passed on to be their glory. There's a few of us still hanging on back here, but they're still wonderful friends. God has blessed us all in different ways. And I just am so thankful for the chance that I have as another person teaching Sunday school and church and being part of this church and the college of the church. And I just pray that even though I'm up in my 80s, I pray that I can be a light yet, even though I can't do as many of the things as I used to do and love to do. But I want to be a beacon and a light for the Lord here in my community, even though my path may be a weakening. I just pray and thank every single one of you folks who have grown with us, over the years, Janice and Gerald, Lucille, Marshall, and Esther, and all these folks that have come along behind me and with us. And I just pray that we will continue to be a beacon to our community, even though we are old and decrepit, but we can still pass people on the street and smile and say, hey, how are you? I'm great. Thank you.
Just for you balcony people, we decided that we talk about closing the balcony to force you to be a part of the conversation. So just because you're up there doesn't mean you don't have to talk. So pick one. Yeah, here comes the balcony representative. No.
Oh,
here
comes Chris.
I will represent just one person on the balcony. I would say I really like the statement, church is a way of being, not a destination. I would say I struggled at about the age of 25 or 26 with thinking the church was no longer relevant. Basically, it was an energy and a time waster. And I wanted to see the relevance of the traditional church. And because I was raised traditionally, I stayed in it, struggling to see the value of it. And I could go on and on about the value I do see in it now. But I think that for that age that he was talking about, the ones that are saying that waitress, I don't see the use for organized religion. I would almost like you to say a little something about the uses that maybe the millennials or the 20-somethings don't see yet because of where they're at in their life. I would hope that maybe you could say something about that.
Well, I think that's the important element of campus ministry. Certainly we need to be more aggressive in college age ministry. That's something that is wanting here, I think we could all agree. But in terms of youth, most of our emphasis on junior and senior high. And then it seems that the college age kids too often in our environment are kind of left to fend for themselves or hopefully get attached, and that's not right. And so that is certainly something that we need to be praying about and being strategic about, intentional about. And even those post-college kids, at 25 would be a post-college. So how can we better be more effective in reaching that age? Maybe we could hear from some of you that are that age. Anybody? 23, 4, 5?
Yeah,
Gerald, that's not you.
I just wanted to correct something that Vern said, because I was here when he first came, when he was just a young guy. And he didn't come back because of the preacher, and he didn't come back because of the fellowship. He came back because he saw Mary Ann.
We all know the story.
Yeah.
So many times.
But a lot of things that we should be involved in outside of the church, I think. There's a lot of organizations out there that started out with this very thing in mind. I think like the YMCA, the YWCA, or some of these other groups, and they do good things, but I wonder if the message of Jesus is in some of those organizations that are out there. I'm not particularly picking on those. And I think we have to be careful, if not just because we're good people or we behave nicely or generous, that eventually that the Word of God has got to come out, the message of Jesus. And if we don't do that, we aren't any different than a lot of other good people that are out there that have nothing to do with the Christian values. And but there are a lot of organizations out there that we can support. You know, think of like Young Life, and you know, we mentioned some of these things that are in the colleges, and even the organization that I belong to, like Gideon's. You know, we're supposed to be out there in the world and giving the message in various ways. And you know, so as members, we could be encouraged to be part of those organizations, maybe, and or help them in some other way that would be a taking a church out of the building and putting it into the everyday world.
How much of this do you think is due to the fact that we sometimes lose sight of the fact that we're to be on a mission with God? I remember how Reggie mentioned the fact that Jesus said, go. And in fact, in the original Greek, it's while you are going, make disciples and so on. I can, from my own testimony, I can tell you, when I go to any kind of an event, be it a sports event, be it whatever, if I'm just going there for me, for what I can get out of it, I have a vision like this. It's tunnel vision. I'm going to entertain me. I want to be entertained by the athletes or whatever the situation is, or the concert or whatever. But if I'm aware, prayerfully, this goes back to the filling of the Spirit. If I'm walking in the Spirit, I'm driving to that event, and I should be in prayer, Lord, open my eyes to what is around me. Make me aware of those around me, sensitive to the little words they say, as was said here, little words that maybe is said, that it becomes my, oh, there is a need. That's something I can address. I can be a blessing person. As Reggie said, we're blessing people. We are an invading force of hope, right? So for me personally, I can say I'm personally spirit. If I'm not walking in the Spirit, when I go to that event, not only am I closed off to the needs around me, but sometimes it's chaos because then my flesh comes out, right? Instead of blessing God's word. I just wonder, you know, how much of this can be attributed to that. Walking in the flesh as opposed to in the Spirit at all times. Being the church out there. And again, like some of you older folks were saying, what a blessing this church has been to you and to all of us. But again, we're trying to think out there, right? What are we doing or not doing to reach those around us in our Jerusalem? Yeah, Fern.
If you choose to serve outside the church in a secular organization, you are the church.
That's right.
And it's so easy for us to say the church is the building. You are the church. And that's part of your service in that organization. You are the church of, you are just this church, you are the church.
Yeah.
Like how Frank said, if we are the church, then we need to be able to reach out to people and share the gospel with them and show them our church family and bring them in. Because it's not about how many people attend our church. It's not like, I have more people at my church than you, which makes my church better. It's right. About our religion and how we share our gospel.
Thank you, Laura. That's right.
There's a lot of us who have opportunity because we're working in Awana or Sunday school program or youth group to love on those kids outside of those programs. Awana ends in the springtime. The summer that we run into those same kids, do we take a minute and give them some time to check on how they're doing? Is there something that we can do?
Yeah. That's a vital time, you know, when parents are bringing kids in and picking them up again, And I commend Pastor Rich for, you know, at these ball games. He intentionally floats around where he sits. How often do we see, you know, the Onico bunch here, the Baptist bunch here, and the LDS people are up there? And, I mean, we're sitting in clusters of our own. Rich is faithful to go and try to rub shoulders with those who are not in Christ necessarily, and just be there and be an influence without even mentioning a word of the gospel necessarily. And if that comes up, then we're ready to go with it. But he's available. I'm stuck behind a microphone, you know, announcing. But what an example he is for us. And we can all do that. We can all do that. It's about being intentional and, again, prayed up. Even when we leave the house, we think we're just going to go down to Tix and pick up some meds. Are we looking for those opportunities, even there, to be a blessing to people and reflect Christ? Yeah, Shannon.
Even somebody who's stepping out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, sure.
You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, I don't have that comfort where they're talking to people.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that it is a little intimidating. And just, you know, taking that step of faith and like, say, if somebody new comes here to church, go up and say hi, because we don't know where the people are coming from.
Yeah.
And just take that so they feel welcome and that they will come back, because they've been sent here for a purpose that we don't know about.
Right.
So just step outside that box, and it's amazing what is out there.
Yeah. Yeah, when the Lord does bring us in from outside, how are we doing? You know? How are we doing with that? You know, it's so much easier just to talk with those you know, and maybe because you've missed them or whatever.
Yeah.
So if the stats are true, it's almost a miracle that they even step foot into this building. Obviously coming here seeking something. And for some reason, they think we have the answer. So. What are some ways that we can go out in our community? What are some things that we can be doing?
I just wanted to share that God's given me the opportunity at First Connect, you know, to work with women that come in for pregnancy tests and STI. And one thing that God has helped me to see at the end of my time with them, because we share with them that we view them as a whole person, not just as a class, but spiritually, emotionally, intellectually. And I get an opportunity to share the gospel with them, but more importantly, I get to pray with them. And it's been really great to pray the gospel over them. And, you know, I haven't had anyone, when I ask them if I can pray for them, no one's ever said no. And a few of them have said no one has ever prayed with me before. And so I just think it's been encouraging to me, because I don't think I've been bold and courageous to do that out in the world up to this point as much. And just, if you're willing to hear somebody's story and then pray for them, just how God can use that mightily. And just to see that also, it's helped me to appreciate, you know, where God's brought all, you know, us in the faith from darkness into light, because there is so much darkness there. And there are people living in darkness, and a new compassion I have that God's love me to see that we don't want to leave them in the darkness. And so, and not to be fooled by appearances, because, you know, young women come in that have their master's degree and good jobs and stuff, but they're still in the darkness. And so, yeah, I would just encourage you. I don't think anyone will ever turn away when you ask me if you can pray for them. And just to see what God's
going to
do with that.
That's called being in the flow of ministry. You know what I mean? When you go in, when you get involved in something like that, you're putting yourself in the, it's like when you merge onto the freeway. When you put yourself in that position of a place like that, you're putting yourself in the flow of ministry. And you can do that just going, like I do, going down to Taco Time in the morning. For my breakfast burrito. You go there, there's the same group of guys that are there, And I, some mornings, I'm in a bigger hurry than others. But by golly, when I go early enough and I can sit down and be with that group of six, seven guys, eight guys, whatever, and intentional about it, don't just let it happen. Be intentional about it and get prayed up. You go in there, now you're in the flow of a ministry opportunity. See that? And we all can have those opportunities. Even if we say almost nothing, you're in an awkward situation where you're in that flow of ministry opportunity. And I would just say the more regular you are about that and being intentional about it, things will happen. And by the way, there's like four different groups that meet that way, different parts of town. You want to be a part of it, fellas, like that. Gals, it's a whole different thing. Different things like Pastor was saying. I mean, it's a whole a different thing that you might. And as you pray about it, the Lord will reveal those things to you, too. Where you can get right into that flow of ministry out there. Anybody else? Yeah, Sue.
I was just thinking, you know, there's just too much of the same about being available. A lot of times it's if you're a man or you're a woman, you know, but you know, if we step out in faith, you know, God has got us, you know, he'll give us the words. And there's no better feeling than when we do, if we know we can put on our heart to actually go to speak to someone, you know, totally the strength in which, you know, if we do have, you know, spiritual eyes, you know, living with it. It's not just a person, it's a soul. You know, we can make all the difference for that person. So, you know, sometimes there's an old saying, I'd rather be a wet water walker than a dry juice sitter. And for that just was came to me from somewhere years ago. But, you know, and being available, I think about my darling little daughter, Becky, and she's available. And she's some of the stories she can tell, and all the broad families, and someday she can pray with, you know?
Yeah.
They're just like, yeah. And the follow-up, you know, maybe, you know, not intentional at all, but seeing that person maybe a few months or a year later, and the difference, and, you know, restore family, or, you know, just the rewards that we do get for, you know, following, you know, the Lord's, you know, voice. So, and she's given a study at the library during a couple of weeks on the Bible study. So that's a kind of that she has on her for years, but it's a community and outreach, and she steps out.
Yeah.
She's not afraid. She's been persecuted.
Sure. Said there are those in this room that are not wired to be an extrovert, okay, and so for them it is more difficult for sure. You know, so what do you do if you're more introverted in your nature? Does that mean you can't be used? Doesn't mean that at all. This means you're being the presence of Christ in His kingdom no matter where you go. Making yourself available to be that blessing. Even if you don't say hardly anything, just putting yourself in position to be used. And that's so important. And some of our older folks that are here, you don't get out as much. You can't, and you're limited. What can you do? Well, you know what you're doing. Vernon, Marianne, they call me quite often and just tell me to pray and check in on you. And that means the world. To know that there are people that are praying. God's not through with you until your last breath, right? And so what a blessing you can be to the kingdom of God because because you're praying and praying, believing for the outreach. That's, when you look at Acts 4, I took our class to that, and my team said this was last Wednesday. It was the lay people that led in prayer for their representative, for their spokesman. And they prayed, believing that God would remove the problem. He would, not that he would remove the obstacle, but they would pray, they prayed that they would make them big enough for the obstacle, powerful to conquer and to keep preaching with boldness. And so those of you that are maybe more shut in, you can be doing that. You can be praying for the witness, those of us, lay people or church leaders both, to be bold in our witness out there.
I think it's very difficult too to, I don't know, you know, it was like years ago, and people in our church reach out to people. But I think today in our society, we have turned such a worldly outlet with legalization of drugs, gay and lesbian relationships, even in our study we're doing on Thursday night, our men's Bible study, one of the thoughts that were brought up was what race are we living in, the rat race. You know, I've even found myself working more hours today than I can probably get in my younger life. People with children in sports, we get caught up so much in society about running here, running there. We were even talking about in our study. I mean, is it hard to break away from those things just to find time to spend with God in a daily devotion? Well, yeah, it is. So if we're finding even us in the church having difficult time trying to find that, you know, it's not just reaching out to people and trying to get them here. I think it's also once we get them here, we try and find the time. I mean, we can come to church, and that's great, but do we find the time to mentor these people and having the greatest gift is that relationship.
Right.
Because that relationship doesn't come overnight. We're in a society today where people want to have that instant gratification.
Yeah.
And so we're getting here and develop that guilt, I think is good.
Yeah, well, growing in the grace and knowledge of Jesus Christ, as Paul put it, that's not overnight. It's a relationship with each other and mentoring and discipling. Very, very important. I talked about that in my class, the fact that we have people that come to this church and then leave and have family members that marry off into the cults even. How does that happen? Because we didn't ask those questions. Didn't ask those questions. Ask them where they were. Ask them, hey, tell me your testimony. That's a good place to start. Can you share with me your testimony? How you came to Christ? And otherwise, you have people that come here and worship every week, and yet they're never challenged with that question of, do you know Christ? Are you sure? And you can just begin with the ask their testimony and go from there. And then disciple them.
I think of Sunday morning church as a place where Christians come to get recharged to go out and serve for the rest of the week. And I think the younger people oftentimes now are not challenged. They're not challenged to their salvation. They're not challenged to go out and reach out into their community in a way of which they're capable. And they like a new frontier, so to speak. And so young people have to be challenged. I think when I was a young person at a church in another city, we had a program of visitation. Monday night, many of us would meet, and we'd go out two by two. The pastor would give us the card of people who had visited church last Sunday, and we would go and call on that person in the city. And many people were so touched that somebody would take the time to come and call on them. We work to go to evangelize just to make them feel welcome and everybody likes to be a person and not a number. And especially in challenging times of life, it's nice to be remembered. Older people, we can send cards. I don't think we realize how often a simple card of encouragement is a help. Oftentimes, when I've needed help and receive a card of encouragement, I'll read that card maybe 10 times, 20 times. It's an encouragement.
Yeah.
And that's something that we older people can do.
I've gotten your cards before, Alan. Thank you. Those are blessings.
Thank you. I had a dear friend one time who said that the way to keep people involved in church is to make sure first that they are saved, that they know the Lord, or keep them involved. And so often we have a lot of people to become spectators in church rather than to be involved. Those are my thoughts.
Thank you.
Well, one of the things Reggie mentioned was the idea was getting into the schools, helping kids learn how to read, things such as that. And so I went down to the school and talked to Mrs. Hammer down there, and she said they actually have just started or trying to start a new program in the school where they want to try and match up people with some kids that need special help. Maybe it's test taking, maybe it's just tutoring, just for... I was like, how much time are we talking to you? She's like, as much time as they would want to give. I've been trying to bug her to get me in a list of things that she's looking for, but I've yet to receive that. But I guess maybe if we all start going on there, knocking on her door, maybe something will happen. But anyway, there are some things going on at the school that we can get involved in with just a short amount of time. And so hopefully we'll have that as well. And I guess in way of closing, let me just kind of challenge you guys this morning a little bit. You have some sermon notes in there that you can kind of go through, but I just... You know, stay up here with me or you want to go down?
Whatever.
But I guess I was is kind of thinking about all of this. You know, the sermon title I had for today was Followership. And I guess my thought behind that is, you know, do we, you know, a lot of us have accepted that call when Jesus, you know, tugged on our hearts and we felt as though we needed to accept him as our Savior. But then when it comes to those points where he's tugging on our hearts to go and talk to somebody or pray for somebody, do we follow those? Or do we kind of push those down as well? And, I think that the way our mindset, the way the society is talking is that we like to be, you know, we're all looking for the next leader, in a sense. We all want to be leaders. I mean, when you guys are growing up, you probably follow the leader. You know, when you're a little kid, everybody wants to be the leader because then they got to make up what everybody else did. But not too many people have ever been trained, or we're not typically trained to be followers. And yet, that's who we are. We are followers. God has made us to be followers of him. And we're always going to be followers. And that's the thing that I guess we probably get away from is the fact that we are followers. Even if we think we are leading somebody, we're leading them somewhere. And so essentially we are following where we're trying to get people to. If we're trying to get people to Christ, we are following Christ. Even though we're trying to lead them that way, we're still technically followers. In fact, it's gotten so prevalent. I found this story online where this girl was applying to a college and in her application asked, "Are you a leader?" And so as she sat and thought about it for a while, she's like, "Well, no." She wrote, "No." And just that really bothered her because she didn't feel like that was the right answer. And so she finally got the letter back from the college, and she's expecting it to be a rejection letter. And she opens it up, and she said, and the letter says, "Congratulations, you've been accepted to such and such college. And just so you know, we have in our enrollment for this year, this freshman class, we have 1,432 leaders. It's nice that we're going to at least have one following them." And so, and we kind of get stuck into that, oh, we have to be these new leaders, but we truly are followers. And in fact, it's kind of interesting because our society says, oh, lead, 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 and yet, oh, no, you're supposed to follow your dreams, follow your desires, follow your passions, follow your... And so we are really, truly people of followers. The question always is who or what are you following? And what's in front of you that you have to go for? You know, what's out there? Maybe it's money, prestige, whatever it might be. We're following something. something out there, whether we like it or not. And so I was just looking at the passage in Matthew 5 where Jesus calls his first disciples here. And I'm not going to expound too much on these. You have kind of what I somewhat gleaned out of there in your notes. But, you know, to go out and be in this world, to be a people of blessing, I mean, people are watching us. You know, people see how we interact, see what we do. In fact, it was after Gandhi. He says, a friend asked him, if you admire Christ so much, why did you become a Christian? And where Gandhi replied, he goes, when I meet a Christian who is a follower of Christ, I may consider it. So people, they watch what we do, how we act, what we say. They truly do. And so we need to be Christ out there. And again, like Hannah brought up, the fact that, you know, we are the church. We are the ambassadors for Christ, as Paul says. And so we need to go and do that and be that. I mean, it's not, you know, knocking them on the head and dragging them to the church, but it's just being who God has called us to be. It's being what's inside of us, coming out of us. And so in Luke 5, again, this is where Jesus goes down and he's teaching a multitude of people, and they're crowding around so much he decides to get into a boat that's sitting on the shore there, and it happens to be Simon Peter's boat. And for time's sake, I'm not going to read it. But Jesus gets into this boat, he preaches to the crowd, and then he looks at Peter and he goes, hey, let's go out and fish. And so I was like, wow, I mean, how neat. Jesus went out where they were, he was in there, he was already in the neighborhood, and he comes across Peter and he starts dialoguing with him. And he starts relating to him where he's at, you know, talking to him about where he is at. And so he's out there, he takes an interest in what he's doing. And then he kind of calls him to do something extraordinary, just to kind of maybe get his attention. And I'm not saying that that's something we have to do. We got to do something extraordinary, like start juggling our Bible or something like that. But just maybe challenge him in a new way, or a new way of thinking, in a sense. I mean, he challenged Peter to drop his nets in the daytime, which is, for that, you know, to be fishing. They typically fish at night. They fish in some of the shallower waters. No, we're gonna fish in the daytime today, and we're going to go in the deep waters. So he kind of did something a little bit out of the ordinary for them. But then what I put in there is he exposed their disbelief. I mean, Peter looks at Jesus and says, well, we've been fishing all night. But because he said so, we're going to go ahead and let it down. You know, I mean, the way I read it, I kind of get the impression like, I'm really not expecting anything here, but okay. And it's not that Peter didn't know Jesus prior to this, because he's seen Jesus do miracles. He just sat and listened to a whole sermon by him. But kind of, I guess the way I read it is like, well, okay, I'll do it. And you know the story, he catches this, you know, huge group of fish, where then Peter says, this miracle happened. You go away. I'm a sinner. You know, why are you even next to me? And maybe that's some of us too. We kind of get into that, you know, Jesus might be tugging on our hearts to say something like, well, no, I can't. I'm a sinner. They're going to see right through me. They're going to look at me and I'm a hypocrite. Or they're going to... And so we pile on these excuses to the point where the feeling's gone, and then we're, oh, okay, you know, it must not have really supposed to happen. So we kind of have a tendency to do that. We kind of suppress the call that God's laid on our hearts. But then he asks them, he says, come follow me. He calls the disciples to follow him. He says, I love the way Luke put it. None of the other writers put it this way, but you know, where Jesus starts out and saying in verse 10 there, he goes, do not fear. You know, don't worry. I mean, how many times he said, well, God's going to lay on your heart what you need to say. You know, if Christ is and we're prayed up and where we're supposed to be, then the words are going to come. You know, it might not be perfect, but as long as we're sharing what God has laid on our hearts, it's can't be wrong. God can use anything. He uses donkey. Why not? I mean, well, we get so caught up in ourselves again. He says, do not fear. From now on, you will be catching men. And I thought it was interesting. He didn't change their occupation. Just like, okay, you can no longer be fishermen. No, I'm just going to change what you're catching. Come be like me. Do as I do. One of the commentaries is just, it was funny, it was talking about, you know, how fishermen are great evangelists because they have lots of patience, because you have to have patience to be a fisherman. You work long hours, you're always doing something, whether it's mending the net or out fishing or sorting fish or whatever. And I kind of thought on my own, like, yeah, well, they like stinky things, so they don't have to worry about the smell. They're also good at exaggerating things, though, so that's not always good. My grandpa always says that this was 24 inches, so. But he also expects a response from us as well. You know, we all have a choice to make. Like I was saying before, we're created to follow. Whether we want to believe that or not, we are created to follow. We are following something. And if we're following Jesus, when he calls us, he's expecting a response. We do have a choice to make, whether we're going to respond to his call, respond to how he's tugging on our hearts, or we're not going to. And for these fishermen, and they had this huge catch of fish, and it says when they brought in their boats to land, they left everything and followed him. And they left their friends, their family. And God may not be calling us to leave everything and go somewhere else, but other than the fact of leaving ourselves and going and caring enough for that other person to talk to them or just share life with them. Dr. David Jeremiah said, when Peter and his friends saw Jesus at work in their lives, everything else became less important. That's really what we probably need to do. And I love how John the Baptist, you know, when he's talking to Jesus, he's like, he's wearing sandals that I'm not even worthy to untie. You know, he must become greater, I must become less. I mean, do we do that? Do we say, Jesus, you need to be greater, I need to be less. It's definitely not about me. And we're not going to be perfect, but he does look to us to follow. And Joseph Stoll, in his book Following Jesus, said this about followers. Obviously, he said, followers refuse to be satisfied with just to be saved and on their way to heaven. For followers, Christianity is a relationship, an adventure, a passionate pursuit of Christ. And probably a lot of us don't see Christianity as an adventure. But, you know, when you think about who God might put into your life today, or who you might have a chance to talk to, or maybe even where you might go, just because you're following at that moment. But he goes on to say, if Christianity is dull and boring, if it's a burden and not a blessing, then most likely we're involved in a project, not a person, a system and not a savior, rules rather than a relationship. So I have to wonder, you know, is our Christianity stagnant at times, or does it seem boring at times? And maybe, hopefully, you know, Jesus is trying to get our attention and saying, come follow me in this. Come talk to this person. Come follow me. And most of the time we don't think we're ready, so we just tell them, go away from me, I'm a sinner. But I guess our prayer for you guys today is that you allow Jesus to touch your hearts again. Right where we're at, no matter where it is, and maybe we'd be willing to follow. Because I think probably the more scarier thing is when Jesus stops calling us to do something. I think that means there's a deeper problem there. So if we're not hearing, we're not feeling that Jesus is calling us to do something or go somewhere, there might be something more that we need to be looking at. So when we do, when we follow that, you know, to go and be that blessing. Because we are a people of hope. We are to be a people of blessing. So may we go and do that and be a blessing.